hello, this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word, and this evening we have as my guest Mr. Doug Kahn. Hi, Doug.
Howdy, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Now you're in Texas, I guess you're saying howdy. You're from Louisiana. Don't they say, what do they say in French?
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Comment allez-vous? I say that all the time.
Is that what you say when you're actually on the street?
Howdy. I say howdy. Hey, y'all.
Hey, y'all. So you're really not Cajun, I guess. Were you born in Louisiana?
No, I feel like I'm a native at this point, but I'm...
Yeah. Oh, you're Ohio. That's
I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. Yeah. Came to New Orleans as a street performer.
Yeah.
That was 25 years ago. Came for the winter and...
stayed for life.
It's home now. Yep.
Came for the... Well, you were tired of the cold, snowy winters of Ohio.
I have the theory that New Orleans picks the people it needs. They choose.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they choose who they need.
So you think that Katrina weeded out those who shouldn't have remained?
Yes. Yep. They sent them all to Houston just for you.
Yeah. So now we're waiting for our next our big hurricane, I guess, to kind of move them on down the road further.
Yeah. Well, you had Ike, right? You had Ike.
We did. We were talking about that earlier. Ike is what closed the Magic Island.
That's
you know, back
sad.
In 2008. Well, speaking of the hurricane, I mean, you know, you lived through that. I mean, what was that like as a street performer? I mean, you were having one day, you know, I'm sure great crowds, and because as a street performer yourself, I mean, that you depend upon tourist trade, obviously, and then for the next day for it all to have disappeared. I mean, did you think about moving or?
Oh, I moved. Yeah, that was shut down. It was instant end of life as I knew it. For really, for several years, actually, I stayed through Katrina. So I rode out the storm. I live in Algiers Point, which is an area that did not flood by the grace of God. Mm-hmm. And weird, long story.
Okay.
I had a flat tire of all things, and no way to
before the hurricane.
The day before the hurricane, and of all,
I knew it was coming. You knew the hurricane was coming.
I knew it was coming, but they delivered the mandatory evacuation way late. So I was like, I have children and a car with a bad tire.
Oh, wow.
So I chose to ride out the storm. And, of course, afterward, there was complete chaos.
Yeah.
And... it was about day two that I realized I have to go. You know, this is not a situation you can stay in.
Yeah, because no utilities whatsoever.
Right. I didn't realize how bad it was at the time. I had some quips through little radio I could pick up.
Yeah.
But it was sparse at best. And, what happened? It was the craziest thing. I'm riding my bike and...
After the hurricane. Wow.
And I'm riding my bike looking for a tire to steal. And God bless me and save my soul for saying that, but I was that desperate, you know. I was ready.
Wanted to get out of town.
Middle of the night, I was looking for a tire. Yeah, and, you know, everyone was gone. Everyone abandoned. I found one.
And you would have abandoned, like they told you, they evacuated, if you would have had the tire.
Right. It was bumper-to-bumper traffic, and there was no way that I knew this car wouldn't make it. I knew it wouldn't. So, okay, fast forward day two. I drive my bike by a used tire shop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this old black man sitting outside the store...
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, did he have a tire for whatever car I had at the time? Yeah, I do. Well, what are you going to give me for it? I said, well, I got beer on ice at home. And I traded a 12-pack of beer for
a tire.
A tire on the rim, full of air. Not just getting in a tire, but understand there's no electricity, so I couldn't have had it inflated or anything.
And top of that.
But it was full of air on the rim. Actually, I got two of them.
Mm-hmm. And so, how'd you roll them home on your bicycle?
The car was drivable.
Okay.
The tire would deflate slowly.
Okay.
So it was not completely flat. It just would go flat within, say, a day.
It couldn't be repaired? It couldn't be plugged or something?
Well, not at that time.
Okay.
Everyone left.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
It was
right.
Mandatory evacuation.
Right.
So, So yeah, literally one of those miracle type situations where, you know, sure, I'll trade you a 12 pack. And
so you were in Algiers, which is across the canal there, basically.
Right across the river. Uh-huh. Right across the river.
And so did you take the ferry back over and see, well, what was all that was happening
actually,
in New Orleans?
On the side I was on, it was not flooded, and that is the west bank. And I drove the west bank through probably 20 miles over to a city called Lulin, and that's where I crossed the river. Mm-hmm. Now, as I was driving out of the west bank, I see a line of looters going through the pawn shop.
Wow.
And
breaking windows. And
yeah, and then the ones that got caught or hogtied just laying on the side of the road.
So the cops are out?
Barely, but
yeah. Pretty scary.
It was horrifying. Mm. It, yeah.
Because you had your family with
you. I had my kids in the car. And
well, they're just looking through the window saying, Daddy, Daddy.
There was some calmness in that we'd left this pretty horrifying situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after 2 days of New Orleans heat in the summer, no electricity, you know, it was brutal. And then you start to get this fear because it was scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately when I did finally, I went to Lake Charles, which, you know, is about 3 hours outside of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And got to see what was actually happening.
On television.
I was just...
Because you hadn't actually been in the city. And
I had not seen...
Down there at the
Dome. I didn't know that any of that was happening.
That.
No.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, some of my friends had actually walked from the Dome across the bridge with babies and toddlers and were turned away and had to walk back.
What do you mean turned away? They couldn't get over town?
Because it was Jefferson Parish. It was a different parish. They weren't letting people in. It was like martial law.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, that had to be pretty frightening.
Yeah,
not just scary.
Were you
afraid people were going to come up to your car and bang on the window and try to...
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
But they didn't. Were there a string of cars with you traveling, I guess?
There was a few. It was sparse. But, you know, at that point, it wasn't like a highway.
It sounds kind of like Mad Max Thunderdome kind of
thing. It was exactly like that, yes.
Huh.
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're about as far away from magic as we could possibly be with this talk. this is...
It was fascinating.
This is a part of my life, I guess. And
how that comes back to magic, I was curious. I said about the tourists. I mean, one day that you had a lot of people, or 1 week, you know, whenever, and then
I moved to Lake Charles. I moved into my brother-in-law's mobile home, God bless his soul.
Uh-huh.
He kindly took us in. We got all nice set up, and got my kids in school up there. It was wonderful. We had internet and cable, and then Hurricane Rita came, and the day we got internet was the day we evacuated Hurricane Rita.
From Lake Charles.
From Lake Charles.
Move on down the road.
Yeah, we went to Bogalusa, Mississippi.
Okay.
And to make a long story short, 2 weeks later, I was back in Louisiana.
Okay.
Thankfully, my significant other, my lovely lady, Angela, she worked at a restaurant that quickly reopened.
Uh-huh.
And was servicing a lot, mainly the military at that time, but mm-hmm. the people were starting to come back in the city. This was probably a month after.
Yeah.
Two months after, I guess. And from there, I slowly eked my way back into... some form of life. I actually ended up being a bar manager. There was a local bar in Algiers Point, and I took a job.
After you moved back to Louisiana.
Yeah, I always wanted to be a magic bartender, and I took a job just one day a week. And the bar ended up under new management. The owner appreciated me and my skills, and understanding that I could not earn a wage as a magician because of the dire straits of the city.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't enough convention work or tourism or, you know.
No one's coming to New Orleans
really.
That time.
Yeah, I mean, I would try, but it was fruitless pretty mm-hmm. much, you know. So I took the job as a
bartender there?
A bartender, and quickly moved into general manager of the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Learned a lot about the business, and that was great. And I still got to do magic, you know. I got to be a very competent bar magician. And,
yeah.
I would like to do so again in the future, I think. It's a great venue.
Have you thought about actually opening up a...
Always.
A magic
always
bar?
Yeah. Would love to. Would
and
love to.
So what's happening?
You know, mainly the liquor, you know, because...
License, you mean, or what?
After working at a bar for 2 years, mm-hmm. I drank too much. So I had to stop drinking or I would have become a crazy alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if I were to open something like that, it would probably be more of a, like maybe next to a coffee shop or something less intense, you know.
Right.
I don't want to spend my night, you know, it's running a bar is a very difficult job. You're up till, you know, 4 a.m. You're constantly training new help.
Yeah.
You know, people are always stealing from you. Insanity surrounds you, you know.
All the time.
Well, in New Orleans, you know, maybe in another city, it would be a little more relaxing, and you know, when you know you close at 2 or...
Right.
So.
Yeah, Banachek had told me once before that he was wanting to open up some sort of a place where he could have a theater in the back, but it would have a coffee shop up front and maybe have some psychics that would do fortune telling and stuff.
Yes.
And they call it the Mystic Cup. I thought it'd be kind of a
neat
little thing.
Yep.
Let me go back again. You had touched on something earlier in our conversation before we got on the podcast.
Yeah.
With having a magic shop. I didn't know that you had a magic shop. And you said that Harry Anderson, that's where you first met Harry, I guess. Because he had his Spade and Arrow shop, too.
Yes,
after you, okay.
Spade and Archer. I had a partner in a shop for a couple of years.
This is early 2000s?
Yeah, this is pre-Katrina. And... I'm working the counter one day, and this guy peeks his head, like, and you know, through the outside window.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's Harry Anderson. And sure enough, it was. He came in the shop, said hi briefly, and kind of mentioned, yeah, I think I'm going to open something up. And he did, Spade and Archer, which was originally by appointment only. So he would sell specialty items, you know, I guess more collectibles and such.
There were some of his items and things that he would lecture about, I guess.
Well, yeah. What I think Harry would sell you his socks if he could, probably.
Well, he's selling ties now.
Okay,
know.
Yeah.
At the TOM, he was selling ties.
Yeah.
He raised a lot of money for Humanity for Habitat, Habitat for Humanity. I think, you know, it's like $100 for his tie. It would, you
only
know,
$100?
I think he raised $10,000, you know, during the TOM for the Habitat.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, he's humanitarian.
He really is. And speaking of Katrina, in addition, he ultimately opened up Sideshow. That was it was a beautiful shop. It wasn't just magic. It was novelties. They would, you know, tarot cards, crystal
mm-hmm.
balls.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a special on TV. I think it was called Sideshow. And he had all the decorum from that show that decorated the shop. So it was just beautiful in there.
Yeah,
and one corner of it was magic. A lot of it was handcrafted by him, by Harry himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a counter guy there that would demo the stuff, and he would happily take your money. You know,
I heard he had a theater to back that he would rent out, like, to corporations, I guess, having parties. Or
whatever. What he had was in a different area of town, right up the street on Esplanade, was Oswald's.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, Oswald's, right.
Yeah, Oswald's was completely separate, and it was about 8 blocks away, and it was a performance, full bar, full stage, full-on, you know, a venue for him. I think his intentions was to grow old and have a tomfoolery style place for him.
And stay
to,
there.
Yeah.
And if it hadn't been for Katrina, perhaps that may have come to pass.
He made the mistake of opening his doors to the political arena. Oswald was, because Harry stayed too. He stayed, the French Quarter survived as well as the Point, Algiers Point. I guess the original settlers understood that place didn't flood, so they stayed there. And so the French Quarter made it. Harry stayed through, and he would hold town meetings. So the politicians and the locals, the business owners and so on.
Would use the Oswalds as a town
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And I think that would drive anyone crazy. And
I understood that his politics were not the same as the mayor's, and he kind of had a conflict.
Well, you know, I don't think anyone's politics are like the mayors. You know, we have a pretty good record of putting politicians in jail.
Yeah.
Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and not just local New Orleans. It seems like Louisiana has had a
different
governors and whatever else. What made you want to open a magic shop? Now, I just had sitting in this same chair a few months ago, Murray Hatfield, and he had a magic shop. And I said had because just in the last month he has closed that. He bought it from somebody else, a brick and mortar, and tried to run it, and it's just difficult. I mean,
In this day and age, I can't imagine running the brick and mortar shop.
What was going through your mind? I mean, why did you want to?
I had a job at a magic shop early on in my magic career
in the 80s.
Yeah, I worked at Lorax Magic in Charlotte. My first job.
They used
job,
to advertise in the
they still
ring.
Do. I just saw an ad in one of the in a Genie, I think. And balloons are their main business.
Yes,
they always were in the past, and they still are, I think. But back in the day, I worked a season at Carowinds Amusement Park, and after that season,
doing magic.
Yeah, that was my first real gig. I was Atmosphere Entertainment.
Now, would you do like a busking kind of thing? I mean,
yeah, it was. I would go out and
or do. Did you do a stage show?
No, it was just Atmosphere.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
I would draw a crowd, do a show.
Funny.
Yeah,
okay.
15, 20. Yeah, it's weird.
You weren't like selling Svengali decks and hawking that. You know, you were actually doing a show.
Yep, I was doing a show.
Okay,
and it was very akin to busking. And a great primer for what was to come later in life. I didn't realize it at the time, but
interesting how you develop skills.
Yeah,
along the way that you call on later.
Yeah, I did that, and so on from Lorax. What a wonderful experience for a budding magician to work. It's such a shame that magic shops are not as prevalent as they used to be because you learn more behind the counter of a shop. And I'll segue this by saying I also spent maybe six years of my life working for Magic Masters, Ken Fletcher's old shop.
In New Orleans?
In New Orleans. I worked a few different places.
He was headed in Atlanta, I think.
I worked in Atlanta for a few months. I trained there for a couple of weeks and went back and worked. And
I used to sell Rocky Raccoon and all that,
Sold many Rocky Raccoons. But, more importantly, the thing about working Ken's shop and basically any shop is that you get to interact with the different forms of humanity, You get to meet 10,000 people.
Different forms of humanity.
Exactly.
That's the way of putting it.
Well,
I understand different cultures.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's
the
socioeconomic background.
Every face is different, Everyone is different. So that, I'd heard that this is what brought David Williamson out of his shell. He worked for Magic Masters.
Right.
And I could see how prior to that he would be a little more of an introvert and then through the years learn how to express himself.
Yeah, whenever I think of Rocky Raccoon, I always think of him and, where he learned
that. And half of that act is straight out of Magic Masters' pitch.
Mm-hmm.
He's,
And so with that you thought, okay, well, I can do this. I can
open
a shop.
I always wanted a magic shop. After Lorax, I was like, I thought it would be in retirement. I really thought it would be later in life.
I always thought that what I'd do in my retirement would be to settle down in some small town and work for a newspaper, and I would be a journalist. But newspapers are going to be
That's a good one, too. That's almost as good as a magic shop.
It's a magic shop, yeah.
Yeah, I still think of it, I think it's viable in arenas that have good foot traffic, tourist areas where you can still sell overpriced Svengali decks.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be happy without the ability to interact with professional magicians or at least aspiring, really serious artists.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be part of it. And ideally, if not the coffee shop, it would have a performance arena attached to it,
Right.
So it could be a magic shop, coffee shop, stage,
But were you starting to see pretty much off the bat that it was going to be a long road to hoe and you weren't going to be successful at it?
I had a business partner, and it was just tough with the partner, when you have, too many eggs in the hat, is that what it is? Too many
cooks in the kitchen?
That's what happened.
Not enough Indians.
Yeah, and we started hiring employees, which mixed things up a little bit. So, and then Harry came to town and did it right. times 10, you know, Spade and Archer opened up, or more.
What is something different than what was his?
Well, number one, it was on the same street. Okay. So his shop was like a block or two down, yeah. You know, Sideshow. And he did it perfect. You know, it was for the tourist, especially. It was to the nines. It was Harry's shop. It was plush. It had, you know, everything. Well, not everything, but, you know, anything that tourists would want. And any magician.
Kind of like a magic, the thing at Ken Fletcher's place. Used to have. It used to be
kind of like that.
Upscale.
A little bit more for, more variety.
Yeah.
A little more variety. But more importantly, it had Harry Anderson backing it. And on any given day,
sure.
You could see him in there. Where would you go? You know?
Good point, yeah. Or someone who's a celebrity, everyone knows who he was. Yeah.
So I think somewhere between, you know, ultimately, I should have opened the shop with a little more investment. I didn't put enough money in initially.
So in hindsight, you think you would have been more successful if you had more variety?
So it was definitely off the cuff. A friend of mine was like, I'm thinking of opening a magic shop. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to do that. Like a partner? And he said, yeah, I would. So we did it. And we did it.
Did you have a big investment in videos?
I would say, you know, I was pretty proud of our selection. You know, we had
because back then videos, of course, were big. And when I'd go to Magic Shop, that was, and then
a book lover, I wasted too much money on books. You know, so they all gathered dust.
You know, you go and look at.
I know it's
Denny,
not, but
Denny and
but
Lee
you
shop.
You tell
know,
that
he's
to
got books.
Yeah, well, he's got books for for the last 50 years, but I had books for two. You know, it takes a while for those things to make money.
Yeah.
So. You just need a little, you know. You need to flush it out right, and Harry did it the right way.
So, again, being in New Orleans, the first person that is synonymous, it seems to me, with New Orleans is John Rockerbomber. You know, I've been there
like
forever.
I agree.
So, how did you first hook up with him?
A friend of mine, Greg Gibson, who actually got me the job at Magic Masters. And when I say got me the job, I was a street performer, and I would say I was a ragamuffin. You know, I was out there with, as I sit here with, like, bald head, I had a ponytail, and I was like a hippie out there. Well, he literally took me to a barber and got me a haircut, bought me some slacks and a tie and, you know, everything you need to work a Magic Master shop.
Yeah.
And
look respectable.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know how he talked me into that, but I do know how. I had my first child on the way, and I realized it was time to be a little more
responsible.
And Ken Fletcher offered wonderful health insurance, and he took great care of his employees. And it provided everything I needed to bring a human being in the world. For,
right.
You know, actually now three, but two at the time.
You've spent a lot of time with John ever since?
Well, Greg said, have you met John yet? And I said, you rock a bomber? He goes, yeah, come on out. You got to meet. Well, I went the first they used to meet on Fridays, I think, but it switched to Mondays. But for 10 years, every Monday night, I would go to what we call the Knights of Slights meeting, which I believe is a offshoot of a Detroit club that meets. I want to give respect to that crew, you know, if with all due respect. But, every Monday for 10, 12, 15 years.
Every Monday?
Well,
it wasn't just a monthly meeting, it was a weekly meeting.
Every week. And John is there every week. Now, I took a hiatus for a while, and John was still there. John has been there and will be there, I think, till the dying day.
Yeah.
And
how many people would attend that?
It would be anywhere from 4 to 40.
Okay.
On average, these days we get about 10 to 20.
But it's really not a club per se, as far as politics go, in the typical sense.
Nope, it's just guys who like magic.
That's the way to do it.
Yep, we sit around and just talk tricks and theory and.
And where do you meet?
We meet at Applebee's, and it's the Applebee's on the West Bank on General de Gaulle.
So people are coming to town.
If you want to come out and have a good time doing some tricks, magic. You know, session Monday night, 5:30 till Whatever. And then we usually close the place down. So
at Applebee's.
At okay. Applebee's, yep.
And so I was going to talk further about street magic, and that you had, during a lecture this evening, talked a little bit about some of the guys who were out of the street and the fact you don't need to have permits, I guess, in New Orleans, which I find fascinating because
yeah.
it's a place where a lot of street artists, if you will, you know, are performing, and psychics and everything else. You told me earlier that that's interesting that there are so many psychics right out there by Jackson Square. That they, what'd you say?
Dozens.
Like, dozens.
Dozens. But they can't, like three or four.
But they can't charge. It just has to be by donation.
By donation only. That's correct.
Now, yes. Is that for all street performers? So anything, you mean you can't solicit saying magic show costs, obviously you can't say it's $5 to stand here. I mean, but no, it's not practical.
You gently suggest amounts through.
What about artists? I mean, sketch artists, same thing?
They are vendors, so they have a vending permit that they pay for, and they can charge.
So a psychic would not be a vendor?
Nope.
Unless they were selling incense or crystals or something.
Correct.
Then they'd have to get a vendor's
license. Now, musicians will sell CDs, and I've known a couple magicians that have put together some products like T-shirts, and a couple have tried like going to pitch style.
Like a Svengali kind of a thing?
Yeah, and I think you can get away with that.
Without having a vendor.
It's got to be pretty low-key. At least in New Orleans.
Now, another thing I thought was interesting that you said it depends upon the day as to whether the police will kind of move you on.
Yeah, it depends on the policeman, I think, more than the day, or perhaps the person involved in bringing the policeman to you.
Okay.
It all depends on who you know in New Orleans.
So it could be a competitor down the street who doesn't want you.
Yeah, it could be the church, you know. For the longest time, we couldn't work at all in Jackson Square because of the Monsignor at the time didn't want any variety entertainment. So for for 2 years, we couldn't work Jackson Square. And then when the Monsignor passed away and we had a new church leader, suddenly back to the square. And all is at least workable.
And you were saying that some of the top guys who are working there include who? You said Dante, or
Dante doesn't work the street as much, but to this day, I think he's probably the best I've ever seen in that venue in the square. I would say keep your eyes open for Alexander the Magician. Mick Stone is a good guy who's been coming to town a lot.
Nick was the guy who said it's the magician.
I mentioned Nico, magician on a magicianonamotorcycle.com. If you want to learn about him. Alexander the Magician, if you Google him, he'll probably come up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Mick Stone has a site.
And do you have guys that kind of tour around? I mean, let's say like Jimmy Talks a Lot or, you know,
sure.
And Eric Evans.
He's a very good friend of mine, as is Eric. And I wish Jimmy would come back more. He loves New Orleans, but he's on the West Coast, and that's quite a trek.
Gazzo comes in.
He hates New Orleans, so he's... In the time I've been there, 20-something years, he came in once, and it was like 2 or 3 days, and I missed him. So
he said enough, huh?
But let me tell you, after Hurricane Katrina, the only magician who called me was Gazzo, and I've never met the man. So that,
just to say, how are things going? You okay?
Yes, exactly. Which speaks volumes not only about... The street performers, but him in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. The community and how they care for each other. And thanks, Gazzo, if you're listening.
And Cosmo, does he get there very often either?
Cosmo used to come all the time. Not as much these days, but I think he's focusing a little more on his...
Real magic.
Yeah, on real magic, Cosmo magic.
And some other projects he's doing, yeah.
Right.
Some videos from other people and whatnot.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's true. And you mentioned that Cellini was a mentor of yours.
Yep. I met Cellini back in the mid-80s at one of his, he had a convention close up. He had a bar at the time, actually, called Buskers.
In
Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh. Yeah, I went down there. It was a higher price convention at the time. I actually slept in my car to go to this thing. But it was all worth it because the convention had all of Cellini's friends. I say Slidini because Slidini was there. Cellini has some pretty cool friends, let me tell you that. And so the convention had all of his close acquaintances, Frank Garcia, Carl Norman, Rocco was there. He had just won his big prize the first time. Bob Sheets, just go on and on. It was the most memorable convention I've ever been to. I'm sure, you know.
And one of the things that you were talking further that Cellini teaches are the three important things of movement, color, and sound.
Correct. Yep. That's the street mantra, at least for me.
And you have to have all three of those things to draw a tip.
I think rules are meant to be broken, so you could do anything, you know. But, yeah, sound, movement, and color, that's hard to argue any of that. So, yeah. I've seen it work over and over and over again.
Well, I've seen the early pictures, you know, from some of Bob Reed's the late Bob Reed's collection of street magicians, you know,
general.
Street art in general, yeah, where that they would be juggling, of course, you know, because you're throwing something up. People see it from a distance, what's going on over there, and then they'll go and see it, or they would have trumpets to kind of blow to make sound.
My first act, I juggled. Yep, I used to juggle.
And
yep.
Then as we were talking about linking rings, you know,
sure.
Earlier this evening, and you had done that, because that is a big thing. It's wide, a lot of movement, a lot of sound and everything. You
people
know, like
instantly
that.
Know it's magic, which is nice.
What I think was interesting further, you said that you just recently started using amplification, you know, microphone and everything. There are some pitfalls to that, but what I thought was interesting is why that you were using that, because you said your personality is low key, and as you have gotten more and more comfortable with your skin of being in this character, which is who you are, of being more low key, I can't see a street magician who is busking and trying to draw a crowd, draw a tip, to, you know, saying, hey, come over here, can you guys come here? I mean, I'm sure you don't do it quite like that, but how do you do it? I think how are you successful doing it the way you do it with your personality?
I'm just not. I just don't make as much money as the other guys.
And you're happy with that?
As long as I'm doing what I want to do, I'm happy. Yeah.
As you were saying, because you're doing more magic as opposed to Gazzo doing more jokes.
If you listen, and I highly recommend Cosmo's DVDs on street magic. If you want to go out and make a great living as a street artist, get Cosmo's 2-disc set, and he'll reference different types of artists, and in one reference he'll talk about the magicians. They're the guys that do the magic and the tricks, and I'm a trickster for now in my life on the street. That's what I am now. I guess just by choice of doing mainly close-up magic, that's what I'm used to doing, is magic in small bursts. You know, when I work restaurants or corporate events or, you know, a lot of environments, I don't do long sets. So, you know, and just the nature of growing up and working different environments like that, that's just kind of the way I've developed. I do have aspirations of doing a bigger show, but it would probably be more of an inside thing than outside.
So when you're saying a bigger show, are you talking about like some sort of a stand-up parlor
show,
a stage show, or
45 minutes,
okay,
an hour perhaps?
For a group of, what, 60 or 6,000 or how?
60 to 200.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, kind of
so,
somewhat intimate.
Right,
okay.
Yes.
With jokes, stories, you see this as being just a one-man show?
Yep, a variety. Yeah, a variety show, you know.
You say variety, all you, but different kinds of
correct.
Things.
Correct, yes.
Like what? What have you got in mind?
I have a great love for mathematics, so, you know, things...
Like Magic Square.
That would be an example.
Obvious, yeah.
Correct, yeah. all the successful magicians, minimalism has, captured my imagination, and I don't know exactly what I would do in that realm, but it would probably be more along the mnemonics line. You know, I have a love for memory work, so I'd probably tie that in as well.
Yeah.
And, this might be perhaps a show presented towards a college or a high school, style audience, you know, teaching or empowering younger minds through magic. And
so with a message.
Right.
Maybe, so it wouldn't necessarily be like a Steve Cohen type of chamber magic show.
Well, that's an option, you know. I feel after 25 years of being in this art, I'm just now reaching a point where I can envision myself in a truly artistic performance situation. You know, I'm just now understanding all the facets that go into doing a true performance of, you know, a full performance of magic.
Well, we just touched on earlier saying it's funny how there's certain things in your life that you do, you gain certain skills that you can put to bear on something later that you can call on,
right,
that you didn't know that you were going in that direction, you know.
Yep.
So
I would say lecturing like I'm doing now, this is not something I've done consecutively in the past. I have done short bursts, but this is a, you know, this is presenting myself in front of a large, not a large group, but a large amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm learning what it's like to stand in front of a group for 2 hours and
right,
present, you know, myself in that capacity. So this will be another skill set that's added to my bag of tricks.
Right.
Albeit a slightly different fashion, but still, I think it counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, long term or in the future, you're looking at doing what?
In the near future, I'd like to lecture more. I would love to see the country. I'm having a great time traveling around and, you know, meeting different magicians, seeing this great country we have, and perhaps venturing worldwide, you mm-hmm. know, be it through professional performance or lecturing and
right,
clubs and conventions. And there's always a street. That's always the bottom line. You know, if someone pushes the button, I still have a job.
That's kind of what Cosmo always said, you know,
yep,
that every once in a while it's kind of like, well, I can go out and make a few $100, you know, just right now, you know, if I need
right,
it wherever I am. It's kind of nice to know that you have a skill set that regardless of
that's
wherever you are. You know, years ago, Al the Only had told me, he lived in Detroit forever, Hamtramck, Michigan, outside Detroit, and
yeah,
was doing a lot of shows, very successful, and he and his wife, Lori, were in Hawaii on vacation, and he said, I would love to live here, this would be a great place, and she was saying, well, you know, you said you can always make a living doing magic anywhere, you know, let's pack it up and do it. So he said, by golly, let's do it, you know.
And they went.
And so, yeah, they went. And also made that commitment, you know, saying, I
right,
am going to make this a success. I
right,
mean, there are a lot of hurdles. I don't care what you think you can do. There are hurdles to everything. I mean,
sure,
life is not easy, of course. But he made a commitment, you know, to make it there and do well, and has. But the... I guess the point is that, which is another thing, you know, Giovanni had told me once that he told his wife that I feel comfortable that if we were on the beach in Florida and that, you know, some guys came down in a helicopter, you know, on a rope and held a machine gun to your head and said, I'm going to kill your wife unless you can entertain me for half hour and you're only wearing, and I'm only wearing my swim trunks. I want you to feel comfortable that you would live.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I have enough stuff that I can do to entertain someone with the bare essentials, you know. And I think that when, you know, that DVD of Nothing by Max Maven was awesome because it was, you know, basically kind of doing something with nothing. If you,
yeah, I haven't seen that. That's good to know.
Oh,
I definitely have to check that
it
out.
It is very good. I mean, it was something that he stopped by when he was going to L&L to do the DVD, that
yep,
he stopped by a Staples someplace and, you know, got a, you know, maybe $25 worth of stuff, you know, of marking pens and pads and whatnot, and was able then to put this all together, just to not to say that this is how you should prepare, but there are things that you could do that would be essentially a great routine, but wouldn't require a lot of props. I mean, you
right,
talk about packing flat and playing big, you know.
Yeah.
That DVD of Nothing, you know, is something that is like that, and I think it's important to have that skill set.
I agree completely.
In your back pocket, that doesn't mean to carry around things in your back pocket, you know, to say, well, I'm ready to perform at a moment's notice. You know, I think most magicians, myself included, that whenever that you know, you're young and you're going out, you're carrying around things, and you're saying, let me show you a trick, you know, and you bore everybody and you lose a lot of friends, you know, saying, oh, here comes that guy, he's going to show me a trick again, you know. So
yeah,
and so until at some point, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You reach that point of self-actualization in which that I no longer need to prove anything to anybody, that I know I can do it if I need it,
right,
because I have the skill set, skills.
Yep.
You know.
I understand.
Kind of got off
I
on
agree
a tangent.
Complete. No, no. That was a wonderful tangent. Absolutely. Absolutely. All makes sense.
Well, we've gone through some things over here, and I think it was fascinating. I think that hopefully our listeners will enjoy well. I appreciate you being part of the podcast and for listening. to this.
Are you kidding me? I love your podcast, and it's an honor to be here. So thank you so much for having me in front of this microphone. I listen to every one you put out. I guess you told me earlier there was more that I'd missed, so it was a good news to me because I still have a lot of hours on the road, and I know what I'm going to be doing when I get back in the car, so thank you.
Some more gold to mine.
I mean, talk about a labor of love, you know. Wow. You know,
yeah.
Everyone listening to this, you send an iTunes review in and thank the Magic Word podcast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And speaking of the magic word, of course, you know, I always like the end of asking what your favorite magic word is.
Wow.
Not necessarily like on the street, that's what your word. It could be your philosophy, you know, your moment of Zen. What is it that?
Yeah, it's belief.
Belief.
You know, my theory section is be nice, be interesting, be amazing. You had asked me that in Columbus, but I didn't even think about, wow, you're going to ask me that tonight. But yeah, if you believe it, you can do it. You know, I believed I wanted a magic shop. It happened. I believed, I knew a year ago that I wanted to lecture and I believed I could do it, and I set the chain in motion, and here we are today. I'm talking on the magic word.
I'm glad we had more time to actually sit down and have this more in-depth conversation, because, again, at conventions, whenever I'm going around like we did at the Magi Fest.
Yeah, right.
I caught you in the hallway.
Yeah, right. It was crazy. Right.
It was you? Was it Michael Dardano?
Yeah, I was telling my mom today about that. I was like, I'm going to Scott Wells' house. I was on his magic word podcast, and she'd listened to it, and she was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And
well, now she'll get a full dose of you.
Well, she will. You'll make her day. I hope some others as well. An honor. An honor.
You're welcome. Thank you very much again for being on. And I think it's just kind of some interesting stuff we've talked about. Hopefully the listeners have enjoyed this as well. Thank you very much again, Doug. And for Doug Kahn, this is The Magic Word, and Scotty out.